Did you have a presentation on the report, or did you just want to answer questions?
Good morning. We don't have an official presentation. This report was based on your motion last week, and we're here to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Questions? Anybody? Councillor McKean?
I'll start off.
So the 1999 model has approximately 12,600 hours of use. Is that what that is?
Correct.
Okay, and the 2009 model has 5,200 hours of use. And it's not due for a major overhaul until 2021, and yet that's the one that's being recommended as a trade-in?
Because the trade-in value is higher.
But that's it, but it also could... It would, if we're going to keep one, wouldn't that make sense that that be the one that we'd want to keep?
Sure. Yeah, I would agree with that. Okay. So you have some choices here. If you want to maximize trade-in, 1.1
Chief,
is
can you move your mic over?
Oh, I'm sorry. Great. My apologies.
So, yeah, so it's the more likely to be the more reliable one, require the least amount of maintenance, that sort of thing.
Correct, Councilor.
66,000 on the second page, there's recurrent emergency training costs of approximately $66,000. So we would have trained people on these helicopters. Why is there a $66,000 cost per year?
Okay, I've got it here. Second paragraph down. So, because on two separate helicopter models.
But I'm just wondering why there's that kind of cost on emergency training for a unit, a helicopter that I suspect our people have already been trained on.
Correct. So I'll get Gary Godziak, Inspector Godziak, to answer that.
Hello, good morning. I'll pass the question. It's a technical question on to Pilot Murray Mashmeyer.
Currently, the air crew conduct emergency procedures training on an annual basis. If the decision is to upgrade to one platform to the larger single but still retain our current platform, then the air crew need to conduct that emergency training on both aircraft. There are some similarities, but between the aircraft, there's different systems as well as different emergency procedures, so that the emergency training would need to be conducted on both types of aircraft platforms.
Okay, thank you. The Airbus, I'm trying to find the model number here, it's noisier, open tail rotors that are noisier. Is there any mitigation technology on that?
Do you know? Again, I'll turn it over to the expert.
There are some mitigation strategies that we've discussed that can be put into place. Number one is upgrading the camera systems, which would be part of the plan anyways, but with a more powerful camera system, we can fly at a higher altitude above the ground and still see the same quality of picture.
But would you? Would you not in the case of a, I don't know, there's a bad guy running through a neighborhood or something, wouldn't you be dropping down anyways?
Our normal operating altitude currently is approximately 1,000 feet above the ground. That provides an adequate picture through the camera system as well as visually looking out the window and seeing the information and vehicles outside the window. With a more powerful camera system, which we're looking at, we could fly higher, 500 up to 800 feet higher, which would help mitigate the noise, but we would be able to see the same quality, even a better quality picture in the camera, but not be so high that we can't visually see what we need to see out the window. So we can effectively get our job done, but at a higher altitude, mitigate some of that noise. It would only be when there's weather, like a cloud ceiling, that would then force us to operate at our current altitude, 1,000 feet above the ground, at which point there would be a noticeable increase in noise.
I just have time for one more. Chief, it would be your preference, I suspect, to get two new helicopters. could you cope with one? Would that be satisfactory? Would you have an effective helicopter program with one new helicopter?
Well, we would have, we could get by. I guess we could get by. There'd be costs related to that with running two different models.
Thank you.
I'd like to, before I go on to Councillor Sohi, welcome Bob Shulko's grade 6 class, also from Michael Kostick School in Ward 5. Welcome. And your counselor is Councillor Michael Oshry there. We're talking about police choppers. Councillor Sohi.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So you have two now, and they're EC-120 model, right?
Correct.
And if you were to replace both of them, if they both were at the end of their life, your preference would be to move toward A-Star B3E model?
Correct.
Okay. And if you buy one, and that is the new model, A-Star B3E, then you keep the other one running along with it, the old, the one that you bought in 2009. So the operating cost difference, I just want to understand, is $66,000 per year. Is that the difference?
Yeah. The incremental operating cost for the one is $300,000. The 66 is just the training. So the incremental operating cost for one single is $0.3 million.
Okay. Yeah. Let me put it this way. If you had two new model helicopters,
mm-hmm. it'd be 0.45 million.
That's the
incremental operating cost.
Okay. And if you had one old model, one new model?
0.3.
Okay. And the cost to replace both, if I understand, with all the trade-ins, if you get that price for the trade-ins, a possibility that you may not get that price, you're looking at 7.05.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. All right. That's all I needed to know, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Councillor Oshry.
Hey, Ms. Rosen. Sorry, I'm going to ask you. So are any departments allowed to spend operating dollars on capital projects?
So, no.
So that's two separate things? So
it is two separate things.
You can't take operating money and buy something with capital?
Typically not unless you have council's approval to do so.
That would include the police then too?
Yes, unless you have council's approval to do so.
Which they previously sought to buy the second helicopter, I believe. It was surplus funds.
Yes, they did that in 2008, yeah.
So the original proposal that you brought forth, Chief, a month ago or whenever that was, called for one new helicopter, correct?
That's correct.
So you just mentioned that you don't, that this new proposal, you want to have two new helicopters that because you want to have them the same. But a month ago, you were perfectly happy having two totally separate helicopters. So now you're saying it's very important we have two of the same. So can you maybe talk a little bit about that?
No, I think that was a proposal by council. That was the first time I heard that two helicopters were on the table.
I just heard you say that you'd rather have two now. You don't want to have two separate.
I think given the scenario that was provided here, we could go with two.
Okay. Why wasn't the this proposal part of brought forth with the other one a month ago? Like suddenly is that because of council direction of maybe that we're not that interested in spending $7 or $8 million?
That's correct. Council came up with that suggestion last week.
So did you look at different options?
Absolutely. We looked at a number of options.
Okay, but we only saw one. It was...
Well, we saw the twin as one option. Okay. And the twin was provided as an option because if the city wants to move the helicopter program back into the city limits, there was only one option available, and that was a twin because of the vertical takeoff ability of a twin, which no single engine helicopter had with the same level of safety.
Okay, and this might be a technical question, but can the new camera technology that's coming out now that you're looking at putting on here, could you put it on our existing helicopters?
That would be a technical question. I turn it over to the pilot.
Yes, the upgraded camera system technology could be placed on our current aircraft.
And then, the current aircraft could fly higher. I'm not saying you would, but you could fly same 500 or 800 feet higher as well.
correct.
Okay. All right. And sorry, just for the noisier factor, can you quantify that? That's not in technical jargon. Is there any way to sort of have it so the average person can understand what the difference in the noise would be? Like, rather than the decibels?
Yeah. So, it's interesting, it's about 0.4 decibels between, well, actually, the current model we have is about 79 decibels, and the model of the B3 is it's the noisiest single-engine helicopter in its class, but it still operates under a threshold of standard. The best way to explain it is that with a Fenestron, with an enclosed rotor, tail rotor, it sounds like a vacuum cleaner. Kind of sounds like a high-pitched vacuum cleaner if you've listened to our helicopter. Without a tail rotor, you'll hear the classic thumping, you know, the thumping sound of a helicopter. And so it's not a question of volume. It becomes a question of the quality of sound. And one is based on what people are saying to us in the industry. One is very disturbing and one is not.
So the new one is disturbing? Is that what you just said?
Well, one is noticeably more prevalent.
So it's not just a volume, it's a tone or...
The best way that I can put it is a quality of sound is different.
Okay, but noticeable. Okay.
That makes sense.
All right, thank you very much.
Councillor Walters.
Thank you. So the model that's being proposed here, is that what was pondered in the original profile? The B3, the A-Star B3?
That's correct.
Okay. And so the level of safety in terms of vertical takeoffs still is dangerous. I thought I heard that the vertical takeoff is possible with this, depending on the training.
It is, but it's not the recommended form of takeoff. And again, the pilots can probably expand on that if you so choose.
Yeah, I think you've answered that already, but yeah, it's okay. So the trade-in, that the option you've given us for the one unit in this report is the new model, or the newer helicopter, but you would contemplate trading in the other one so that the financial option here would actually be $3.9 million as opposed to $3.3.
That's correct, and that would be subject to council's direction if whatever council chose.
Because why would we trade the older or the newer one? What would be the rationale for doing that?
Just increased value on trade-in.
Save us money today.
To save you money today, understanding the position council's in, as well as the helicopter depreciates quickly. So in the next couple of years, you're going to see significant depreciation on that newer helicopter. You'll see less depreciation on the older helicopter. It gets to a point where it just starts to slowly decline as opposed to a quick decline.
Okay, thanks.
Councillor Nicol?
Going back to my former question, Chief, just back to measure of productivity, and I just wonder if you had a chance to look at those, the question I asked last time during the budget, or last go-around, in terms of the cost savings of the police helicopter in terms of, as opposed to sending cars, in terms of a dollar metric. Does the question make sense? That's the first thing I always ask.
It does, and we weren't able to get that with any accuracy.
No problem.
And if we had more time, I'm sure we could come up with a figure for you, but I don't want to mislead council.
Understood. Thank you. I won't hold it against you.
No, thanks very much.
Councillor Essinger?
Thank you very much. The first proposal is the one with the vertical takeoff. And this proposal is less expensive, but it's also because you could house it with the RCMP, is that correct?
We can house it at its current location at Villeneuve or with the RCMP. We have two options.
At the end of the day, which model do you still prefer?
Well, again, in a perfect world, it would have been the twin, but I understand the situation that we're presented with, so this B3 would be the best option at this time.
Are they readily available, or do you have to buy it and then have a long waiting period before you receive it?
It's my understanding that they would be available, and again, the pilot would be able to provide you with a little more information on that, but it's I talked to the manufacturer, and that is the most popular helicopter out there for a police purpose in North America, the B3.
Okay, and I was interested in this trade-in value, because if we don't trade in the newest model, if I read this correctly, it's very operational till 2021, is that correct?
That is correct.
And if you trade it in now, it's $1.1 million. So you really, versus the other one, you're saving about $500,000, is that about correct?
That's entirely accurate.
So $500,000 saving, or we could use it for 5 years. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Councillor Anderson?
I'm getting a little bit lost in all this, and I realize to some extent we have done that to this, but what are the advantages? Because I know one of the reasons we went for the helicopters we had right now, and Lord knows I still hear enough complaints, was around sound. And that's why we picked the ones we had. So I'm not quite sure. I understand what the advantage of going to the twin is. I guess the question that this now is begging is what the advantages are of the new singles that we would be buying over not necessarily the age of the one. Let's, assuming we could buy brand new ones of what we have right now, which are quieter, and we picked very intentionally for that purpose, what the advantages of going to another single that is louder, I'm not sure what it does that our current ones don't do, except that it's newer. So what are the advantages of what you're now proposing as a new single over the singles we have right now, assuming the singles we have right now were brand new?
The main advantage is the ability to carry extra fuel, which translates into extra time that we can fly in the air. And with our current aircraft, where we're most limited is in the situations where we have to have three people on board. So when we train new crew members, we have a pilot, a trainer, and then a person learning to do the job of a tactical flight officer or a new pilot. In those cases, we lift off with approximately 60 to 70 minutes of fuel. Now that we're transiting from Villeneuve, it's approximately 10 minutes back and forth, so we get over our work area, over the city, with only about 40 to 50 minutes of fuel, which is very limiting from a standpoint of it's the criminals that dictate when the calls come in that were needed. So we start off with 40, 50 minutes of fuel, and then when a call comes in, that's the amount of time we have to respond and effectively deal with a call. In contrast, with the aircraft that's being proposed as an upgraded single, we would be able to carry three people on board with up to 3 hours of fuel on every single flight, and that would operationally be a substantial upgrade.
So is there a single that we could go to that actually dealt with the sound piece, which I think was very important when we first chose the ones we have right now? I mean, it was one of the major criteria that we have. Is there a single that can get us that kind of...
The one single engine aircraft that was discussed last week was the EC-130, which has the benefit of having the enclosed tail rotor, the Fenestron, a quieter sound signature. The disadvantage is the configuration of the aircraft. And what was noted was the width of the aircraft. So part of flying the aircraft is being able to see out the window the target, whether it's a person or in a vehicle that we're following. With the extra width of the aircraft, that makes it very difficult, if not impossible, to be able to view that target out the window. And that's, I think, the main reason why that aircraft has had very limited success, or agencies have chosen it for that reason.
So if we're looking for quiet and staying in the single, the one we have is the only option, but there's no way for it to carry more fuel then, is there, to modify in that sense?
Correct. So when I talked about lifting off with an hour to an hour and 10 minutes of fuel, that's at gross weight. And the reason that is because we carry about 600 pounds of mission equipment, the camera systems, mapping systems, microwave downlink. So essentially we're lifting off with the equivalent of about three invisible people on board in the form of equipment. So when we're lifting off with 60 to 70 minutes of fuel, it's we're at our gross takeoff weight, which is the maximum amount of fuel we can take.
How often is it, you know, because how often, because its primary purpose is to fly the two, and I'm guessing that's what it does most of the time, correct? So how often, and if there's only two people in it, how long you...
There's a difference between the aircraft as far as their weights, but with two crew members, it would range from 2 hours and 15 minutes up to, with the lighter aircraft, which is the older aircraft, up to 3 hours. One thing that we've done operating out of Villeneuve, we've also...
How often, so then it begs the question how, you know, because again, in terms of what we're actually trying to do here, how often do we need to take three people up? I mean, if it's a training sort, if it's a training thing, I'm guessing we're not doing that on a very regular basis. The main, you know, if we're, I mean, again, now we're buying a noisier, infinitely more expensive helicopter for something that actually may be a small portion of the time that those helicopters are in the air.
We tend to train tactical flight officers on an annual basis, usually two at a time, and that training period goes for 2 months. So for 2 months, we're lifting off with an hour of fuel, resulting in about 40, 50 minutes of work time over the city. So during that two-month period, I would suggest it has a very significant impact on our capability to provide the service that we're in place to do. The other thing that relates into people have asked about the vertical takeoff is that with the current platform at gross weight in the summertime when the air is less dense, it doesn't have the ability to lift off vertically, whereas the upgraded platform we're talking about can lift off with full fuel at gross weight on a day that's 30 degrees Celsius, and that's also a significant upgrade as far as aircraft capability.
Councillor Loken.
Thank you. Of the two choppers, EC-120, the current one and the proposed A-Star B-3, two different manufacturers?
Same manufacturer.
Same manufacturer. Okay. Okay. And just to, in case anybody's confused up here, this was requested by myself and the mayor in a motion on Friday to come back with the two chopper single engine scenario. So there was never an ask by the chief or the service for two choppers. Just to put that on the record. So I'm looking at the numbers here, and in some of the answers to my colleagues here, particularly Councillor Walters, I'm a little, unless I'm confused, which is entirely possible at this point. If we were to go for the two chopper scenario, then obviously both current models are in play. We would trade those in, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. So if we go for the single, which is the current amendment before us, would we not trade the older model and keep the newer model?
You can do that, absolutely.
Okay, because I thought the answer coming back to Councillor Walters was different than that. Am I mistaken?
No, I think that's an option left up to City Council. If you wanted to get maximum trade-in value for either helicopter, now's the time to do it.
And that was my next point, is now's the time. If we're going to do a two purchase here, the time is obviously now. Costs are going to escalate. And that's my next point. In the next, is it quite likely, if we were to go for the single chopper, is it likely in the next capital budget cycle that we might see a request for another new chopper because of the fact that the oldest one is going to be almost done by then?
That is a very real possibility.
So if we do that and we don't act today, then we're just going to be having to possibly spend more money in the future.
That is correct.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Councillor Essinger, if you could take the chair.
Have the chair.
So how long were you in the scenario where if we were to purchase the new twin and continue to operate one of the EC-120s, I guess, as a backup, how long were you planning to have the second chopper, the smaller chopper, for?
Within the next capital budget cycle.
So 4 years from now, you would be looking for us to replace the second chopper with logically probably the same model of whatever we go with, just for parts compatibility, operating efficiency, training compatibility.
Exactly.
Okay. So your original assumption was you would live with one newer, bigger chopper of some description and one of the older choppers, and you'll optimize based on trade-in value which one's the best.
Absolutely, and bring that before council.
Okay. Now, one of the reasons, I mean, the original reason why we're in this situation is closing of the central city airport, which you were operating out of, and that gave you range in all directions in the city and the ability to go there, refuel, and carry on.
That's correct.
Now you've got the additional travel time to Villeneuve.
That's correct.
And you did explore an option to work from the military base, which has lots of helicopters there, and is much closer to the city.
That's correct.
And that didn't pan out.
It did not.
If in the scenario that we go with more robust helicopters that have different operating parameters, is there anything in your view that would enable reopening the conversation with the Army base as one option?
Well, I think we would always look to any opportunity. If that was available, we would certainly explore it. I don't know if that's available.
Okay. Because that would take care of some of the transit time issues. If you were able to be on the base, would you be able to get by with a 120s?
No, I don't think that was a possibility at this time. And there were a lot of restrictions on the base that would certainly curb our ability to use the helicopter to the same extent we can now.
And some of it had to do with run up. Area though, right? Takeoff and landing area.
It was there were fueling issues,
communications issues, security issues,
a number of issues, largely around security and the availability for the base to be open 24/7.
And part of the question around this is the vertical takeoff and landing, because in the twin scenario, you were looking to also develop a heliport somewhere in the city, which would also improve the response times. And then you've said it doesn't work. The pilot said you can fully loaded take off and land even at 30 degrees Celsius, the AS-350. So, but there's a safety margin issue there?
That's correct.
To answer that, it has the upgraded single that we're speaking about has the performance capability of verticaling, but it then becomes a question of safety and risk mitigation, in that should you have an engine failure during that phase of flight, that until you gain sufficient altitude to be able to then get airspeed to land through auto rotation safely, there's a risk. So if we're operating outside the city like a commercial operator working in the bush, that becomes less of a consideration. But of course, our working environment being in an urban area with residents, traffic, whenever we lift off vertically, we are always mindful of having options to land the aircraft. And so although this upgraded single has the performance capability at gross weight, warm temperatures, or verticaling, we're always cognizant of what we are flying over.
So in a pinch you can, but you wouldn't set up a heliport in the city to operate that way on a regular basis?
Correct. For a heliport, we would need larger space, secondary landing areas, etc., sir.
Okay.
If I can just further respond to that, Your Worship, in conversations with the manufacturers, they say it will do it. It's just not recommended for safety purposes.
I'm almost out of time, but the EC-130, this has been very useful, by the way, to have the pilot to be able to provide some of this information. And I understand the point about visibility, because it is kind of a wide-body deal where you're on the left side. But when you're doing most of your work, you're orbiting, right? And the camera's on the left side, and you're orbiting counterclockwise? Or do you go the other way?
with our current platform, we're orbiting counterclockwise. The pilot sitting on the right, the tactical flight officer operating the camera sitting on the left. But I can visually look across and see out the window the target that we're following. So I compare what I see on the screen to what I compare out of the window to be able to properly position the aircraft.
But
as you mentioned, the 130 is a different drive system, so the pilot flies on the left or the center. You'd mount the camera on the opposite side, but the visibility crossways in the cockpit then becomes limited because of the width of the aircraft.
And then I'm out of time. Shoot. Well, really quickly, is there any sense that there's likely to be something like an AS-350 but with an enclosed tail rotor in development in the next few years? Should we, I'm not saying wait for that for both, but would there be value in, is there any likelihood that that's going to be on the market within the next 4 years?
Pilot would better answer that than myself, Your Worship.
It's something that we've suggested. There's nothing from the manufacturer indicate to us that that's anywhere in the foreseeable future. And I think the reason is...
Tell them we'll take two if they'll build...
I think there's engineering issues, but we've definitely expressed that that would be a very appropriate aircraft for law enforcement.
Okay, I'll take the chair back. Councillor Caterina.
Chief, with the two new scenario, what year would that take you to before you'd ever come back to us to
in a perfect
require?
World, probably 20 years.
Okay, so even if it's 10 years or 15, that would be realistic. So two new would get you through not just this capital, but next year's capital and probably the capital after that.
That is correct.
Okay. And one of the reasons why we're having this discussion on the different helicopters and the reason that one of the main reasons why you suggested the twin was because of one of the consequences of having to move out of the city center airport on the type of helicopter it is. If it can't lift, it needs a runway, and we don't have the land available within the city, which would be the most effective place for you to be doing your job with
That's
that
correct.
Equipment.
That's correct. Just a simple cost-benefit analysis. The cost of land, $27 million. The cost of the aircraft, $7 million. If you had it in the city, $3 million for the land. So you'd a significant savings of $20 million.
Right. And, you know, this is one of the consequences. And given the size of the capital budget for Blanchford, $3 million or $3.5 million is absolutely nothing compared to what you're spending on that project at this point, Ms. Rosen.
Two entirely different projects, but yes.
But the consequence of doing that project has initiated this need or this different type of need because of that, and I think that that should be taken into account at this point in time, because that decision affected other decisions, which this is one of.
I'm assuming you're directing that comment to your colleagues.
Okay. Thank you.
Your Worship, if I may excuse myself, I am appearance before a Senate committee here at 12 o'clock. So.
Oh, okay. You're going to go tell them we need some money?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, as long as we're all on the same page here. Well, thanks, Chief.
If we had a helicopter, you'd get there quicker.
No, VIP transportation is not necessarily part of the mission profile, right?
I wonder if they could land on the pyramid. But...
Okay, I don't see any further questions for the police commission and staff, so we could receive this report for information at this point.
I'll move that.
Okay, thank
Second.
You. So that's, I think Councillor Esslinger caught that one first. So moved by Councillor Loken. Please vote on the receipt of information of this report, which will be helpful when we move into debate on this, which may be this afternoon. And display the vote. And that's carried. So thanks so much for the supplemental information and especially for the answers. This has been very helpful for us. Next up is the Z-Library. Thank you.
Councillor Caterina, do you have a presentation on this? Or?
No, there is no presentation, Mr. Mayor, but I would like to point out a typo on the last page, priority number 11, Ellerslie. That should be Ward 12 and not Ward 9.
Well, we're going to have to redistrict anyway by the time we get to it, so who knows what ward it'll be. It'll be Ward 14 by then. I do not support adding councillors. Councillor Esslinger.
Thank you. I just wanted to understand the criteria when you select a new branch or upgrade a new branch. Could you just kind of go through that process for me?
There is a number of issues that the library board takes into consideration, whether it's a new branch or a branch redevelopment. Some of the other ones that are not listed here include consideration is always given to the possibility of a joint use partnership opportunity with the city, and that's why Meadows was moved up, because of the rec center being built at that time. So we look at the current population, what the projections are for that particular population. We like to ensure that the site location is close to a current or planned LRT or on a premium transit route and roadways, readily accessible to pedestrians as well, and also the kind of building assessments, the asset condition if it's something that we're going to be leasing. So there's a number of issues that are taken into consideration. Not all of them are balanced. Sometimes it's population that becomes the number one priority or criteria, if you will.
Okay, and as the library board works through it, they weigh all those things and they come up with their priority list, and that's where we got this list from.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you very much.
Councillor Gibbons.
I'm going to ask the same question around Pilot Sound, where you call it Pilot Sound and then you go in here and talk about Lake District. It's Lake District and Pilot Sound.
And McConaughey.
And McConaughey. Well, with Pilot Sounds and McConaughey.
Yes.
So, do you feel your populations here are, have you been given those populations by the city, or you think they're low, conservative?
The population that we have given you, we think is fairly accurate. We use the Environics software, which is it's a base segmentation software, so it looks at things like customer and geographic areas by demographics, lifestyle, attitudes, behavioral traits, so it's sort of the full package that's looked at. So we think they're fairly accurate, yes.
I think that Councilor Logan and I can tell you that probably there won't be a lot left in that area in 4 years, 5 years at the very maximum, and that's how fast it's growing. But the Pilot Sound one was on near the top of the list back before the Clairview one came on board.
That's correct.
So it slipped because of the fact that we built such a big one in Clairview, and this one is somewhere in the next 10 or 12 years or whatever?
That's correct.
So, number 7 versus, you got 11 different priorities on this particular one. If you do, if this, your smaller one you're talking about is only a something that can be the interim until that time because of the growth?
Is the EPL Go you're talking about, the interim solution? Yes, it's because there is enough population out there to warrant something, but not the full full meal deal, as we call it.
That's what you're doing right now in Lewis Estates as well?
That's correct.
So is there other districts in the city that you're doing that with as well?
McConaughey is another one that we're looking at.
Well, this is McConaughey.
Yes, Pilot Sound, McConaughey is, we are looking at that one next, as a matter of fact.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Councillor Henderson?
Well, just to clarify in terms of the list, because in actual fact, the next priority would have been Riverbend.
That's correct.
But the decision to put the package in for Lewis Estates was because of, as with Clairview, because the opportunity was there to build at the same time as the... So that's the reason why that one jumped up.
That's correct.
So it actually did change that priority list in a way, but only because of the opportunity.
Exactly.
The actual next biggest need is still Riverbend.
Riverbend, correct.
Okay. Great, thanks.
Those are all of the questions. But valuable to have the supplemental information. System works. So thank you very much for this report and your time.
I can move to receive this for a
second. Yes, thank you. So that's moved by Henderson, seconded by Walters. Please vote to receive for information and display the vote. And that is carried. Okay. So now we're back to the Transportation Department reports, I believe. Which are 5.4 and...
Mr. Mayor, 10.2 and 16.4, which were cross-referenced reports, haven't been dealt with as well. So 5.4 and 10.2 would be next up, and then at some point we should probably clean up 16.4, which was
5.4 and 10.2 are cross-referenced. Sorry, there's a cleanup on which?
On 16.4, which was cross-referenced with 5.2.
Oh, 16.4 is the Heritage Valley Park and Ride. Yeah, there may be questions on that one as well. So, but we'll deal with the bus garage and propulsion system ones next. Did you have any introductory comments?
Just a couple, Your Worship. What you've got before us is a referral from the Transportation Committee in October. We have attached an analysis around the business case and value of the base case diesel buses, CNG, what we've seen to date, and the potential for electric use. We see lots of upside in the future use of electric, but the jury's still out, and it's not an unequivocal green light, but we think there's lots of potential in this technology, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, this was a very helpful report. I think if we'd had some of this information at Transportation Committee, it would have been a better discussion. But I'm glad to have it now to be able to inform the decisions about Westwood, and I'm intrigued and about some of the other things you've raised. But Councillor Henderson has questions on this one.
Yeah, I magically, there I am on the board. Although I had questions, I didn't expect to be first. I'm curious what our timing is like on the electric at this point, and how solid we are on these numbers. I mean, they're great. It would be nice to get on with it. I mean, because part of the frustration here is we've been talking about going to something different for a long time, and we're still talking about going to something different. So, it'd be nice to do the shift as soon as possible. So, when will we have enough comfort in what we're doing here that we can actually get on with it?
Councillor, our electric bus pilot program will commence in the first part of January 2015. Our bus will arrive probably within the first 2 weeks of January. At that point, we will be conducting the winterized testing pilot, and we propose to come forward with a funding strategy as well as a progress report on the electric bus pilot sometime in about the third quarter of 2015.
So we will know. By third quarter next year, whether or not these numbers bear out in a winter model, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And then, how much do the greenhouse gas? I mean, it's. I mean, the one question that I had about it was. Right now, and this was ironically one of the arguments when we got rid of the trolleys, which I didn't support, was that the way we make our electricity in this province doesn't really gain us any advantage over diesel. So we're now saying something slightly different, I notice.
We are, and I'd ask the first, Shelley from Sustainable Environment there.
Hi. So we generally know that electric buses in Alberta will produce lower GHG emissions over the lifetime of the bus. And we know this because the Alberta electricity system right now is very carbon intensive. But we also know that most forecasters agree that the coal units are going to be replaced by combined cycle and cogeneration gas-fired units. So that's going to, and as well, there's going to be some additional wind power feeding into our system. So that's going to cut the intensity of our generation emissions in half by 2050, with most of that happening before 2030.
So I guess the question is, So the one that's coming that we'll be able to use in winter, is that one that we've purchased, or is that another test model?
That's a lease as well.
That's a lease as well. So, but is it new, or is it one that's already been used elsewhere? Is this new technology now?
Yeah, it's brand new. It's the second generation of the long-range battery electric, which is designed for winterized testing. It'll be the first one in North America.
So we'll be testing it.
That's correct.
Yeah, for them as well as for us.
That's correct.
So will we know back in time? I mean, when are we expecting our next major reinvestment in new buses?
2017 will be our first big purchase of buses.
So we will know by then? So our window is still open in terms of the next purchase?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Well, I look forward to getting this as soon as possible. I mean, I think if we can get this, to go, this could be a really good news story, but not if we dither. So I'm hoping we can get that information back fast and that these numbers bear out. Thanks.
Councillor Nicol?
Well, unlike Councillor Henderson, I'm going to echo the voice of caution, because as we know, battery technology in a cold climate can reduce range of the operation of the vehicle of up to 25%. So can you quickly just tell me how this long-range new technology, because battery technology has not fundamentally changed much, despite a lot of stuff that's been going on in other fields. So how does this long-range bus deal with the minus 30 operational parameters that it has to be in? And do you expect a negative metric because on the bus range?
So very good points. That's one of the main reasons why we wanted to do a winterized pilot to do the analysis on the effects of cold weather. We've been basically, the manufacturer is one of the largest battery manufacturers in the world. They're significantly different than the hybrid battery technology that we currently have. They are a lithium iron phosphate battery, which isn't as susceptible to cold weather as the typical lithium iron type of batteries that are out there right now. So there's a lot of things that, even with the battery buses, the way they're being built is being designed for a winterized environment.
Now, from a parts perspective, you've heard me ask this question before as well, in terms of multiple parts suppliers, and or I expect this one to have lower maintenance, obviously, as an electric. But do we have multiple parts suppliers for this if we make a major fleet investment for this, or are we tied to this single supplier?
Well, this bus in itself is designed around the American standards, so it would be the first one for the company that we're leasing it from. The future specs, if we were to design them for winterized version, we would design them around parts availability, what is North American itself, yeah. So what we use in our current fleets.
Yeah, it just goes to the security of the supply chain and that sort of thing. My last question goes to the CO2 offsets. Now, what was the dollar value we were using to determine these numbers for the CO2 value offset?
So the dollar value as a CO2 offset we were using as a city standard, $40.
So we're always using $40.
To price out for business cases, I know that the city currently purchases the carbon offsets at a lower price, but it was under my understanding and direction from the office environment that that's what we would value.
Is there any particular, is the office of environment here, why would we use 40 and not the reflective real market price?
I don't have the reasons right in front
That's
of me.
That's okay.
My
if you don't, it's just an outside the box question. If you
council,
find out, you can
council
email.
Council determined that price as part of the city's greenhouse gas reduction strategy, so that was approved by the previous council on the advice of administration. It's the number that Shell and a number of the other companies use in their
model. Fair enough, but if there is significant CO2 variability to the price, it does affect the issue of the business case.
Yep.
So that is, I think it's a worthwhile question to ask if we're going up or down, and it could be better.
Well, Councillor Nicol,
it's not a big deal.
No, but I think it's reasonable. You know, there's two pieces here. One is about building a garage, and is the various equipment going in that garage going to change the configuration of the garage or not? And then the second one is that we will be into replacement of buses in 2017, and you want to make sure we've done our due diligence around what our replacement options are. And in that financial modeling of that, we should give you, you know, a range of impacts based on, you know, market expectations for fossil fuels and market expectations for non-fossil fuels.
Yeah, because going forward, in terms of, I'm hoping the electric buses work. I really do. I think it's the way to go. But it is, there are some associated risks with it'll catch eventually, but is it the question of now or later? That's my only concern going forward. Thank you.
Hey, Councillor Sohi.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So, how the electricity is produced in Alberta will change over time, as you suggested, right? And that will have reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. So, but what are you projecting here, the close to 8,000 tons for electrical buses? That's addition, the unit factoring, and what is the reduction of the source? This is on top of that, right?
Sorry, could you ask that again?
Okay, there will be reduction in the greenhouse gas emissions on how the electricity is produced. That's separate. We don't control that. But the projection here for the electrical buses, the number is close to 8,000 tons of reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. This is comparing if you use diesel.
Yeah, close to 8,000 tons was using the average of what the grid will, the carbon intensity of the grid over the lifespan of the buses. So we can safely say that there's going to be an intensity of about 600 tons during the lifetime of those buses. It's currently 800 right now.
Okay. I'll follow up with that offline. I need to understand that better. The overall, you're going to do the pilot and test the technology in the winter. But how about, have you factored in some of the other customer comfort? For example, amount of heat or the noise or the odor, all those things, and the impact of the odor and the fumes on the operator safety within the garage and the health and safety aspect. Have you factored that into it?
Absolutely. We've gotten overwhelming response of the surveys conducted at our previous pilot. We are also integrating some of the comments that we received from that pilot and we pass it on to the manufacturer. We would also anticipate that we would be putting another similar to that, a survey. We'd ask the patrons to come on board and do a survey as well during this pilot.
Okay. And how much are we going to be spending on replacing the buses over the capital budget? Not the growth buses, the replacement, and if this is successful, as you were telling Councilor Henderson, this will fall into the overall purchasing and procurement.
Paul, if you would.
Whatever you're spending, this will, whatever the results are, will influence what kind of buses you buy.
Councillor Sohi, the profile for replacement buses over here, it's $76.26 million.
$76.26 million.
The renewal profile for renewal buses.
And the pilot will determine how that money is spent on whether which kind of bus.
The pilot, as well as the recommendation from council on how we would like to proceed with it.
Okay. I just need to understand the emission aspect better, but I don't need to do it now. I'll maybe talk to you later on. Thanks. Yeah.
Councillor Walters.
Thank you. So the summer pilot is complete, and all went as hoped. Check, 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 check.
Better than we thought.
Better than you thought. And so other cities have done winter pilots, though, with electric buses. European cities with all different kinds of batteries, I understand.
Yes, they have.
Yeah.
But not with this type of bus.
Not with this type of bus.
That's correct. We plan on building the bus up so it's actually tailor-made for the city of Edmonton, and other people could use this as a spec. And we're trying to get rid of the middlemen in the purchasing side of things, so we buy direct from the manufacturers when we get into that point.
Because if it works here this week, it works anywhere.
Okay.
Right. That's good. So now just this chart on page 4 of 9 talks about the cost savings of alternative fuel options over a 60-year period. That's the cost to build plus the cost of fuel that equals those savings?
Paul?
So the analysis looked at a full life cycle model, including capital costs, as you said, and operating savings. So we use 60 years as the estimated life cycle of the garage, because that's what the analysis was based on.
So this is initial. So if we were to build it for compressed natural gas, which this is saying we shouldn't, that would be enormously expensive.
Right. The upfront cost of compressed natural gas infrastructure is higher.
Right. Okay. So, and this also says to retrofit it is, like, what is that? What is that margin exactly? I can see it as it's a slight margin, but what is that number to retrofit?
To retrofit versus
to build
the natural gas infrastructure?
Oh, no. Sorry, the electric.
The electric? Our estimates is it's marginal. For electric buses, we have estimated
for the
build option.
What I'm trying to understand is the difference between the build and the retrofit, the cost.
For a retrofit, we estimated $7.5 million. For a build, we estimated $6.8 million.
Okay. Okay. And when would we'll fund it in this cycle, and then when would construction start?
Councillor Walters, I think just to add, the whole notion is the Westwood Garage would not be purpose-built for electric, because you can
fit about that.
Right, and what we're trying to illustrate is that even if you had to go back and do a retrofit in Centennial, the cost is minimal.
No, I hear that, but the question is, when would we start? So that being said, when are we thinking that we're going to start construction on this garage?
We would move into it as soon as we had approval of the funds, and we'd move into the detailed design phase.
So right away.
The construction will start this year.
Okay.
Sorry, 2015.
Okay.
Councillor Walters, just to add on that, the target for construction was tender second quarter of 2015. There's remediation work that we would have to start with first. You'd start to see building construction later in 15, early in 16, depending on budget approval.
So generally the case has been made to get going, and if we realize that we're never going to put a diesel bus in there, it's only going to be electric, the cost to prepare for that is $1 million or so.
But we'll still have diesel buses while we phase over.
Yeah, because of the phasing.
That's right. And it'll take several years, many years, to change the whole fleet over.
How many years?
If the pilot
is as successful as our summer one was.
Our goal is to change over the 250 over the next 10 years.
10 years. Okay. Thanks.
I think we'll call it a halftime here. And reconvene at 1:30. We'll finish these questions off, and then we'll see if there's any more amendments or changes that develop over the lunch hour, and then we'll be finished with these transportation reports, and then move into debate in the early part of the afternoon. We're in recess until 1:30.